This is Roger Goldman. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Coming up, Anthony Duggan and Christina Richardson will talk to us about the upcoming Grand Hyatt Job Fair. Then we'll be joined in the studio by South Summit School Superintendent Greg Maughan for our monthly update. And we'll finish our hour with Executive Director Jeff Whitley and Development Director Andrew Cullen to talk about excellence in the community and their upcoming concert series. Please stay tuned. Well, several hundred homes in Heber City have been standing since pioneer days. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports a new initiative aims to preserve them with a historic district.
Heber has hundreds of homes built generations ago by Utah's pioneers. But while they're a big piece of the Valley's story, they can be difficult and expensive for homeowners to maintain on their own.
Without a historic district, no historic homes in Heber have any kind of protection, nor do they have any opportunities for grants or tax relief. And that really surprised me that we hadn't done the work because we had so many beautiful pioneer homes.
That's Heber resident Rachel Kaler. She's the executive director of the Community Alliance for Main Street, and she's at the helm of a new initiative to create a historic district downtown. This summer, she's been knocking on doors, talking to the residents of the city's distinctive red brick pioneer homes, trying to garner support for a district.
It's a significant amount of work. It takes a grassroots effort. This cannot be brought to council from a council member. This cannot be brought from the planning district. It has to be the community bringing it to the city in a citizen-led process.
At least a third of the property owners within the proposed district must agree to it. Kaler envisions a historic zone that stretches from 5th North to 6th South and from 5th East to 6th West. She's counted more than 350 homes in that area, she says, would qualify for preservation based on their age and significance. And she's even identified a handful of homes that were built by the original families who settled the Heber Valley in 1857.
Of those 11 original families, there's 4 or 5 or maybe even 6 homes that they built between 1860 and 1890 that still stand. And I just think that's so fascinating that these originals built these homes and they still stand, and we need to make sure that those homes are protected.
She says people shouldn't be apprehensive about living in a historic home. They can update the interior with modern comforts while preserving the exterior. Kaler says she's been inspired by plaques on historic homes in Midway that tell short stories about the building's histories and original families.
So I thought, well, let's do that in Heber. You know, let's take a great idea and just expand on it.
She envisions creating a walking tour of the historic properties sometime in 2025 so people can learn more about the city's story. In the meantime, she invites locals to come learn more about the initiative Friday, September 20th. There will be live music, art, food, and discussion about what a historic district could look like. Details about the event, including a link for tickets, are available at kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Amendment D will appear on Utah's general election ballot, but the results won't be counted under a judge's ruling that rendered the proposed constitutional amendment void. In a remarkable decision issued Thursday morning, 3rd District Judge Diana Gibson said lawmakers who drafted the proposed amendment had failed to accurately communicate its subject matter. It's the second time in less than 3 months the courts have rebuked the Utah legislature. The proposed Amendment D would give the Utah legislature the power to repeal and replace citizen-driven ballot initiatives. Gibson issued a ruling less than 24 hours after hearing arguments in the case, siding with plaintiffs who alleged that the ballot language of Constitutional Amendment D violated the Utah Constitution because it was written to trick voters into giving up their constitutional rights. The plaintiffs, the League of Women Voters of Utah, Mormon Women for Ethical Government, argued the amendment should be struck from the ballot entirely. But the judge opted to keep the language on the ballot because striking it so close to ballot printing deadlines could jeopardize the state of Utah's ability to comply with all election deadlines. It could also increase the party's exposure to legal, financial, and timing risks. That also allows the ballot question to remain in case state officials successfully appeal the decision. Okay, anyone driving from Park City to Heber can't help but notice there's a flurry of construction activity that's been going on in what is now known as East Deer Valley. At the center of the action is the new Grand Hyatt Deer Valley. Here to tell us about the hotel and its coming up job fair, we have General Manager Anthony Duggan. Good morning, Anthony, and welcome.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
So, Anthony, let's start with the big picture. Can you give us an overall view of the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley facility?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're obviously the first hotel, first building in Deer Valley East Village, and we're extremely excited to be in that position. We've got a huge property. It's about 650,000 square feet in total. We've got 381 guest rooms. 55 residences, 30,000 square feet of meeting space, which is one of the largest meeting facilities in the mountain region. And we have four food and beverage outlets. We have our signature restaurant, our coffee shop, as well as our bar.
That's three. What's the fourth restaurant?
We also have a lounge off of the the signature restaurant.
I want to talk a little more. Can you give us any sense of what the signature restaurant's going to be like?
Certainly, it's going to have mountain American cuisine. The menu is inspired by our culinary director, Mark Marone, who has had a number of different restaurants in the Salt Lake City area, and we're super excited to work with him. We also have a mixology program that is inspired by Frank Maldonado, who is an incredibly renowned mixologist out of New York City.
Okay, so 30,000 square feet, is that will be one of the largest meeting facilities in the state of Utah, won't it?
Yeah, in the viewing area, it's probably 50% larger than any of the other hotels.
Well, lots of rooms, lots of residences, lots of restaurants. Going to need lots of people.
I was just about to say that's exactly it, yeah. We're probably looking at opening up with about 200 members of staff, and we're going to be needing to hire the entire hotel. So we're looking at front-of-house employees from front office and Bellman, bartenders and servers, to our back-of-house team as well, the heart of the house that really keeps the hotel running, our housekeepers, our culinary team, our stewards, as well as engineers and security. So we've got a lot of positions to fill. A lot of positions to fill.
And I want to talk a little more about the job fair, but let me ask you, are you able to sort of, for lack of a better term, seed the hotel by bringing over some existing Hyatt employees just to give you a foothold?
I think that's a really important point that you bring up, Roger. Our secret sauce, our superpower, is the culture that we have within Hyatt. Our purpose is to care for people so that they can be their best, and bringing in Hyatt people who understand that at the core helps create that DNA that Hyatt is really just so well known for. We have brought in a number of people from other Hyatts throughout the country. But we've also brought in locals as well to fill the ranks. We've probably got about 30 people already on staff, and we're looking to fill a ton of more positions.
But that looks like you got a big number to fill. Tell us about the upcoming job fair. What are you going to try to do to help move this process forward?
Well, really, what we're trying to create is a one-stop shop for people who want to come and work, or at least think about working at the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley. So we're creating an event where people can come, they can actually apply for the jobs. We can interview people, and for many of the positions, we'll actually offer jobs on the spot for the right candidate. It will be subject to successful completion of a background interview, but we really want to make this as easy as possible for everybody who comes along. It's important that when they do show up, that they bring their best selves. We want to know about you. We want to know about the people here, but we want them to ask us questions. We believe in Hyatt, we believe in the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley, and we want to share what makes us so special.
And I'm trying to visualize, what will the room look like? In other words, you've got this wide range of potential jobs. Are there going to be like half a dozen tables with different staffing? Describe what people will see when they walk into the job fair.
Well, I think the first thing they're going to see is our ballroom space, which is absolutely incredible. Our ballroom is 10,000 square feet. Our junior ballroom is about 4,000 square feet. It is enormous. They're going to be able to come in. We're going to have different areas set up with different people who are going to be talking about the jobs that are available within their departments, but also interviewing people as well. We're going to have some computers set up so that we can help people apply for the positions that they're interested in applying for. And I think it's going to be just a very positive and we're hoping a very inspiring event.
Okay, and when and where will this be held?
Very important. It is going to be held on property, which is very exciting. This is probably going to be the most number of people that we are bringing from the outside on property, which I think is incredibly exciting. It's going to be on Wednesday, the 18th, between 11 o'clock and 3 o'clock. Sorry, that's this coming Wednesday. Between 11 o'clock and 3 o'clock, for those of you that haven't seen the property going up, it is we're off of 40, exit 8, the Mayflower exit. We are at 1702 Glencoe Mountain Way. It can be Googled, and Apple Maps will take you to where you need to go. But we will have signage, we will have human arrows directing people, because it is still an active construction site. You'll see a lot of activity going on, but we'll make it as easy as possible for everyone.
And the question that people always want to know, where will they be able to park, and will it cost anything to park?
It is going to be free to park. Thank you for asking that. Where we're going to be parking, we're going to be hoping to have a number of parking spaces right outside the area where we will be, where the job fair will be conducted. But we will have human arrows directing people where to go.
You spoke a little bit about Hyatt culture, and I assume one of the benefits of working for Hyatt is the access to that culture. But I assume there are other sort of more quantifiable benefits. Can you talk a little bit about that?
We have incredible benefits, and thanks for asking that question. I think when you work for a hotel company, one of the greatest benefits, and I think Hyatt does such a great job with this, is our complimentary room benefits. You are eligible for complimentary rooms at any of our hotels worldwide, which is an incredible benefit. We have, I was going to say competitive pay, but I think that we probably have some of the best pay in the area. And our paid time off policy is the best paid time off policy that I've experienced in my career.
So, Anthony, let's talk a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be with Hyatt and here at Park City.
I don't know if we have enough time to quite review all that, but my name is Anthony Duggan. I'm the general manager, obviously, of this incredible property. I was born in the Bahamas, of all places, and then before I was one, I moved to the Cayman Islands. And I think that's probably where hospitality dug its fingers into me. I went to school in England, and when I graduated from college, I actually joined Hyatt as part of their corporate management training program. It was many decades ago, it seems, but I left Hyatt. I worked for a number of other hotel companies, but I found my way back. Since my return to Hyatt, I've worked at Miraval Hotels, Alila Hotels in California, and now I found my way to paradise here in Deer Valley.
Okay, and how long have you been in the area?
Since March.
As you get in the sun. And look, before we go, I want you to talk a little bit about your vision for the hotel. In other words, when people talk about the Hyatt Deer Valley, what do you want them to say about it? What do you want them to connect it with?
I think there are many experiences from a guest perspective that we can talk about. We want to be known for our food and beverage program, which we think is going to be best in class. We want to have a hotel guest experience that is second to none. One of our differentiating factors is the fact that we have so much conference, such a large conference facility, and being able to execute conferences in a way that nobody else is able to bring them to life in the area, I think is something that we really want to be known for. More importantly, and probably most near and dear to my heart, we want to be the employer of choice in the Park City Deer Valley area.
You'll also have some pretty incredible ski access, as I understand it.
We will. Deer Valley announced last week, and we're really excited about this, that part of their expanded excellence actually will take place this season, in the 2024-2025 season. We will have three lifts that will access this new terrain, and we will have 300 new skiable acres of this expanded terrain. So while we're not, I'm new to the area, as I mentioned, but I'm trying to understand skiing vernacular, and we're not quite ski in, ski out. We're about as close as you can get to ski in, ski out.
Okay, anything else you want to add before we go, Anthony?
I think that's it.
All right, we've been speaking with Anthony Duggan, the general manager of the new Grand Hyatt Deer Valley. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Roger.
We'll be right back after this. Park City Film's fall session kicks off this week. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the lineup includes action sport documentaries, 2024 Sundance favorites, and the year's final outdoor screenings.
The first film of the fall, called Anytime, screens at the Park City Library Thursday. The film from Shimano, Red Bull Media House, and Ant Hill Films looks into the minds and lines of the world's best free ride mountain bikers. Then this weekend, writer-director India Donaldson's Good One comes to the library's Jim Santee Auditorium. It's about a progressively more tense camping trip in the Catskills and premiered at the 2024 Sundance Film Festival. So did the following weekend's film, Sugarcane, from directors Emily Cassie and Julian Brave Noisecat. They won the documentary award for their investigation of Indian residential schools' harmful legacy in Canada. Park City Film will show the documentary Black Ice for one night only September 19th. It's about a Dutch-Ghanaian Olympian, Akwasi Frimpong, the first black athlete to compete in skeleton at the Winter Games. Here's Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang.
We'll show at the beginning of the night a short film about his incredible journey, which is filled, of course, with setbacks and resilience. And then we'll have a panel discussion afterwards with Akwasi and then Emily Fisher, who's the Executive Director of the Youth Sports Alliance, along with some YSA athletes who are breaking barriers in our own communities.
Ticket sales benefit Frimpong's foundation, Hope of a Billion. The Pendry Plaza Fall Film Festival runs September 20th and 21st and the 27th and 28th. Films include Kung Fu Panda 4, Maya and the Wave, Robot Dreams, and 399 Queen of the Tetons. Those will be the last outdoor movies before winter. The final showings in September are Widow Clicquot and High Country. Widow is based on the true story of a woman who finds herself at the helm of a French winemaking family and becomes a pioneering champagne producer and entrepreneur. High Country portrays Crested Butte's transition from mining to ski town. A post-film panel discussion will feature outgoing Park City Leadership Director Miles Radiman.
Miles is featured prominently in the film, if anyone's seen it, because, of course, he was instrumental in development of Crested Butte before he came over here to Park City. So it's a nice way to kind of bookend his career.
Head to kpcw.org for detailed showtimes and links to tickets. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. Roger Goldman, and joining me in the studio is South Summit School Superintendent Greg Ma. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. Well, Greg, it's fall. The new year's school year started. Any surprises around the start of the school year?
Well, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but it's been, I think, a really good start. Kids are in classes. Teachers are teaching. And it's been a really good, smooth start to the year.
Were there any significant changes in the enrollment numbers that you saw this year? I know our population moves around a lot, but was it pretty stable?
Yeah, relatively so. Our numbers are they're relatively, you know, stable. They aren't shifting a whole lot. Of course, when they do shift, you know, in a smaller district, a small shift, you know, what would be a small shift in one district might be a little bit bigger for a smaller district. Our numbers are pretty similar to what they've been.
Greg, we talk a lot about the kinds of programs and opportunities that are available to students in the South Summit District. Are there any new programs this year that are worth sort of talking about?
Well, do you mean specifically student programs?
Well, either one. Either
well,
one.
So we have, the goal is to have enough programs where every student feels connected to school. So that they want to be in school, they feel like school's a great place to be. And so right now, we're at the beginning of the year, and so the schools are going through the club application process, things like that. So it seems like there's always going to be new programs, new clubs, things like that, and we'll actually know what those are in October. Generally, you have until October to establish those things and get your applications in for those types of things. We continue to just focus on having kids be in classes and learning and learning at high levels and eventually helping them figure out what it is that they want to do with their life.
And I know that you still continue to have a number of programs that create opportunities to learn technical or vocational skills.
Correct.
Are you still partner with UVU? What can you just describe a little bit about the scope of that program?
Yeah. So we have a fairly robust CTE program at the high school there in Camas, and we do partner. South Summit partners with UVU for our early college classes. You know, concurrent enrollment. As well as UVU and MTech for technical focused classes, and so we have kids that we have students who transport to Heber to, you know, UVU. Just really depends on the program that they're interested in, and we try to help get them as close to some sort of industry certification as possible.
Okay. What is, you mentioned, as we were talking just before we came on the air, about the GSIP program. What is that?
GSIP. So GSIP is, it stands for Guaranteed Strategies and Intentional Practices. And, you know, teaching's always been very complex, and it seems like when COVID hit, we asked teachers to do the impossible, and they did an outstanding job of that. And as I talked to teachers, as I talked to administrators, a lot of people felt like they still just haven't been able to get back to what it was like before COVID hit, and you know, the world stopped, everything went remote, all this and that, and we see all kinds of other outcomes and things from that. And so really our theme this year is back to the basics, and that is to do what we know we need to do and how we know we need to do it in providing the best instruction possible. And so in our district, we're focusing on six specific areas related to just these guaranteed strategies and intentional practices. So like, for example, planning is crucial to a successful lesson. You can't shoot from the hip for very long, access, rigor, things like that. And so our professional learning is focused in those areas, and our new instructional coaches that we are board approved for this year, they're spending a lot of time in GSIP with teachers doing, in coaching cycles, just things like that. And so really the goal is to get extremely good at what it is we're supposed to be doing. And some of the feedback we've had from teachers and administrators is they feel like there's clarity in what needs to happen. Just as far as, kind of getting back to the root of what we're actually there for.
Yeah, it's interesting because the public perceives, only part of what you guys do, which is we see the classroom, we see the students, but we don't see the infrastructure that you have to develop, train, and enhance the careers of your educators. So I take it it's a pretty extensive training program that you have, ongoing contact with your teachers to help them find these best practices.
Yeah, it is, and really, at the center core of what we're trying to do is student impact, obviously, and so I'm a firm believer in building capacity, mm-hmm. Whether it's building my own capacity or building others, and so really that's what we're doing, and along those lines we've changed our evaluation system to align more with. We have to align with the Utah Effective Teaching Standards, but we've aligned our evaluation process with the GSIP and just tried to streamline things. So where it used to feel like a teacher had to, there wasn't a whole lot of clarity on maybe some sort of goal setting or things like that. We're just kind of targeting in on, okay, let's really focus on student growth. Now, what is it? What's our goal for student growth? Now, what is your professional growth goal on how you're going to help kids meet that student growth goal?
A minute ago, you mentioned this concept of changes in outcomes. A lot of national publicity around the notion that students who went through COVID suffered some accomplishment and achievement setbacks in terms of reading readiness and other sort of metrics. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing a bounce back? Are those students recovering? What are we seeing in the district?
Well, I think that's a great question because you certainly have the academic piece,
right?
But you have the mental health piece that I think schools are I certainly can say for South Summit at least that. We've seen a huge increase in the amount of needed resource around mental health, and so we're doing what we can to provide that academically. I think the longer kids are able to be in their classrooms, learning with peers right next to them, things like that, I do think that we're seeing that some of that recovery. And I think that there are a lot of students who, especially for the primary grades, that we're learning remotely. We're having, you know, we're continuing to try to provide additional support for them, just with some of the basics that students actually pick up a lot of behaviors, you know, and I don't mean necessarily good, bad behavior, but just even how to speak or how to articulate and make certain sounds, things like that. They learn that from their peers as well, not just from the teacher. And so I think, you know, that's another one of the things that we saw take a dip in COVID, and we're seeing we're seeing that come back with additional resources or supports that we can provide to kids.
And you just mentioned the importance of additional mental health resources. Can you talk a little bit about how those resources are available and how they're supplied to the student body?
Yeah. So 3 years ago, we had we didn't have any social workers. We didn't have anything like that. And right now we have, two social workers. We have a district psychologist. We also, the county is kind of taking mental health back as it's
priority.
Supposed to be, yeah. And so we've been partnering with our county, and they're providing some additional help and support in the mental health arena. Specifically, they have students who are going through, you know, university programs to become social workers, and so they're helping as well. So we have more support than we ever have, and which is a good thing. It's one of those things. There's certainly job security in being a mental health professional.
And I take it that you have facilitated the ability for teachers to identify and refer students for mental health assistance.
Yeah. So we kind of have a flow chart, if you will, or you know, of how to help students get access to those resources. And it goes from teacher or paraprofessional or administrator to, you know, counselor, and they, each school has a student study team that they talk about those students, and that's kind of how, for lack of a better word, that's kind of the gatekeeper as far as making sure that we're getting kids the right resources that they need.
And any discussion of student mental health not can often lead to a question about school security. And we've talked before, but can you remind our listeners about the changes in school security policies that were mandated by the Utah legislature and where you are in the process of implementing those?
Yeah. So right now, every school in the state, I think, is working on their needs assessment. So in the bill, in the law, we've got to have an assessment done and submitted to the state by December 31st. We're shooting to have it done. I'm hoping that we'll have ours done by the end of this month, so that we can submit those. But it's not just a matter of walking through a building and looking, oh, hey, this, you know, we need a lock over here or whatnot. We're going through with our local law enforcement, with Summit County Sheriff's Department, the assessment itself is quite robust, and so that's where we're at right now. And from there, that's where we'll get an idea of things that we need to do to increase and improve security. There are several things we've done in the last few years that have helped. And then from there, it becomes an issue of, you know, prioritizing and starting to figure out where to tackle, you know, what first.
Okay, so that is submitted by the, you're about to finish it. What's the timeline for the process going forward?
So there's several different pieces to it. Our board has approved a cost share with Summit County for an additional SRO, mm-hmm. school resource officer. And we're asking the county council to consider that, for their next fiscal year, which their fiscal year and our fiscal year don't match. So our board has approved it, but the county fiscal year, you know, starts at a different time. And so we're hoping that will work out. And so far, the county has been fantastic to work with. They've been just, I can't say enough positive about how nice it's been to work with our county leadership and our sheriff's department. And so we're hoping to have that in place. And, you know, some of the big things that you hear about in the media, every school, you know, has to have an armed security person from bell to bell. So from the time the morning bell rings to the time the afternoon bell rings. And there are different ways of meeting that requirement. One is called the guardian, which is just an employee that has to go through relatively extensive, you know, background and training, things like that, you know, psych evaluation, stuff like that. And then, or a third party company or SROs, and we're opting for the SROs.
Okay. You mentioned to me that you were starting a calendar committee.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something new? I assume you've always had to, you know, run calendars.
We always do, yeah. A couple years ago, our board shifted our policy from having a calendar committee every year to we're able to do it in two-year increments now. And so we're just getting a calendar committee together. It's actually bringing the old calendar committee back because they serve on that committee for a few years. And we'll be creating proposals for the next 2 years. We'll get parent input, faculty, staff input, and then ultimately this committee's responsibility is we'll approach the board and make recommendations, and the board will make the ultimate decision.
Before we go, Greg,
yeah.
Where do things stand on the housing project? You knew I was going to ask that.
I did. I knew, which is great. I love it. So a couple months ago, our board had a working session. The last thing that the board did, so let me back up.
Actually, back all the way up. The housing project is the potential to build affordable housing for teachers on some school property, correct?
Yeah, for employees is what the goal was, or the vision is for it. As the further we go down that road, we aren't sure that it will meet the mission of that, in the sense of when I think of affordable housing, I have a different version or definition of what that is compared to what legally the definition of affordable housing is. And if it's not going to put teachers in houses, it's not going to accomplish our mission. So one of the things that we're studying is what would it look like to, say, for example, build houses and have rentals for teachers, for employees. Would that meet the need? And so the board has, they took action a little bit ago to table it until January of this next year, and then while in the meantime, we'll look into options beyond just building and selling, you know, so possibly building, renting, things like that. So that's kind of where that's at.
That's really interesting. I mean, I think there's a lot of controversy, or not controversy, not the right word. There's a lot of different views about the best way to achieve affordable housing,
yep,
between renting, you know, creating rental pools or selling. So I think it's fascinating that you guys are going to look at that. And obviously, we'll talk about it in January after you get some ideas.
Sounds great.
All right. Anything else before we go, Greg?
No, I'm good. Thanks. Right.
Thanks, and have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Preserve Midway invites locals to put on their walking shoes Saturday morning and explore the town's open spaces. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has the details.
The organization dedicated to conserving Midway's rural character is hosting a Volksmarch on Saturday. The name comes from the German for people walking, and the event is just that, a chance for curious people to roam around the town's scenery and learn more about Midway's heritage. Here's Preserve Midway founder Lori Stone.
In Europe, when you Volksmarch, you would invite people from surrounding communities to come and Volksmarch, come and walk and see our community and all the good things about it. And so this year we are Volksmarching. We're gonna go walk and see what your bond dollars have worked hard to save. And that is the Kem Gardner Family Snake Creek Preserve, which is walking the path to preservation.
People will gather in Midway's Town Square behind the Town Hall at 10 a.m. Saturday. Besides the walk, there will also be food trucks, farm animals, and a Swiss Miss performance. The event is free, but attendees are encouraged to donate to contribute to open space funding, with a focus on the 44-acre Christian Mitchell property on River Road. And it's a chance to learn more about conservation as Midway residents get ready to vote on a proposed $5 million open space bond this November. More information about the Vokes March is available at kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Excellence in the Community is an unusual organization that presents free concerts in a number of cities around the state of Utah. Here to tell us about the organization and about some upcoming shows, including some here in Park City, is founder and executive director Jeff Whitley and development director Andrew Cohen. Good morning, gentlemen, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Good morning, Roger.
So, Jeff, tell us a little about Excellence in the Community. How long has it been around, and what inspired you to start it?
We were founded in, well, our first event was in December of 2005, and what inspired me was I used to be a street musician in Paris, and then when we had a lot of success in France, and that group grew, and then when we had every hope that we would be equally successful in Utah, and we would play for years in Utah, nothing happened. We were always in the background. And finally, there was an incident. It was in Park City, actually, where we were playing at a wonderful place, and I thought we were doing a great job, and went to the manager. I was going to ask for a raise. And he said, "Oh, Whitley, I'm so glad to see you. There's something wrong with your group." I was expecting accolades. And I said, what's wrong? He said, "Well, when you guys play, no one leaves." And that's what started Excellence in the Community. All this great music in the background, can we get it on concert stages? So we started a nonprofit. We got that recognition in 2006. And we began with one concert. We've had a corporate sponsor. They said, "I love the idea, put on a concert." So it was my own group.
And then now in 2024, we're putting on 137 shows in 25 different communities, including Park City, happening this Saturday, the 14th, at the in our partnership with the Eccles Center.
Well, Andrew, I want to get to that, but I want to hear a little more about the range of activities that you guys do before we sort of focus on what's coming up. So, how many did you say, Andrew?
137 concerts in 25 different communities all over the state of Utah.
And they're all in the state of Utah?
Correct. We feature only Utah artists and only focused in on Utah. Correct.
And I'm just thinking about the logistics of arranging that many shows, the sound, the venue. Who does that?
The team does it, but I guess I do a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And we have a great staff. We need more, but we love what we do. We say often we're in the joy business. Yeah. And what happens is we work really hard. But all of that tedious work transforms into a real great fulfillment when the music is good and when the audience is pleased and when communities are served. So there's a real recharging element to our work that keeps us all going.
And how do you find musicians, or maybe perhaps more accurately, how do musicians find you?
They come to us, we get recommendations. We're in touch with many of Utah's finest musicians, and they often recommend people we don't know. There's a steady stream of people who apply, and we try to check them out. And then, of course, it's also the audience will come to us and say, "You need to check out so-and-so." But the good news is Utah has fabulous resources in every genre in terms of talent. And we're just trying to find the best and to create opportunities that didn't exist before, both for communities and for audiences and for artists.
Now you mentioned genres. Andrew, can you tell us a little bit about the range of genres that are included in your concert series?
Well, every one of the concerts that we do is family-friendly, so we make sure that the genres meet that requirement. But we're all across the board. Jeff has about 700 artists that he has dealt with about 60 different genres, all kind of a mix. Like, for example, on October 29th, coming to the Eccles Center is David Park, who brings classic violin to it, but he fuses it with jazz, and he's done this at Carnegie Hall. He's done it all over Europe, but it really is an amazing, unique performance. And What's so neat about this, Roger, is that these artists have to go elsewhere, and Jeff has created the ability of having them stay local at their hometown, playing for their communities and paying them. And they love that, and it's why they're so attracted to excellence.
Okay, so I know that a number of these concerts are live streamed, because frankly, I've watched a number of them. Are all your concerts live streamed?
That would be ideal. Mm-hmm. It's a question of funding. Mm-hmm. We have, on a very limited budget, we have created hundreds and hundreds of live streams. We started that during COVID, and we continued after. But lately, budgets have been trimmed. So we are seeking funding so that we would love to live stream every single thing mm-hmm. we do. Mm-hmm. We have pretty close to 95 to a million views. No, I'm wrong. I'm 100 million views mm-hmm. on our live stream. The cumulative, we're getting large numbers there, but we've had to cut back lately.
And again, I know a large number of the programs have some jazz relationship, but they range outside of jazz as well. I take it, right?
Yes, Celtic. We have Broadway coming up tomorrow night, Broadway and Beyond at the Eccles Center here. And the list goes on and on. Bluegrass, country. We just did Charlie Jenkins, a country band in Daggett County and in Sevier County. And just did a big band swing dance at the Gallivan Center. I'm just going down recent things. Right. And we've got Yacht Rock Monday night in Ogden. Mm-hmm. And then coming up in Provo October 19th is at the Covey Center. That's my own group, Larkinspur. That's the group that got Excellence started.
So let's focus a little bit on Park City, because there are a number of events coming up both in Park City and in the greater area. What have we got coming up? First of all, what's coming up on Saturday, Andrew?
So one of the things that makes Excellence very unique is we're bringing artists that have played at Carnegie Hall and all over the world free to Park City community in conjunction with the Park City Performing Arts, Ember and her organization. And we partnered with them because part of what we do is not only bring Broadway and Beyond, which is an amazing group that Jeff will talk about a little bit more detail, but we also bring an educational element to it. We're going to be going to North Summit County and Camas School, South Summit, where these are underserved areas that need music programs, and bring these artists in for mentorship and special classes. But Jeff, please talk about Saturday, as Roger asked about, and Broadway and Beyond.
We want to invite everyone listening to this wonderful radio station to come. Melinda Kerrigan-Voss, fabulous soprano. She also plays the piano. Brian Stuckey, for my money, the best tenor in Utah. Fabulous singer. Again, he's performed all over the world. And then Dr. Jared Pierce of the BYU School of Music on piano. Brian Stuckey also plays the cello. And it's a program of Broadway hits. And what's amazing is to see how powerful three great musicians can be. Piano, cello, two fabulous voices, and the classics from Phantom of the Opera, Les Misérables, Wicked, Waitress, and more.
Okay, so that's the first program, and that's this Saturday at the Eccles at what time, Andrew?
7:30.
7:30. Okay, what else do we got coming here to Park City?
And you can get tickets at excellenceconcerts.org, or you can go actually to the Eccles Center website.
And even though it's free, it's important to get tickets, I take it.
Because it's limited seating, correct. Please register for that and bring the entire family. It is a family-friendly event. You know, kids will love it.
A big part of what we're trying to do is give everyone, regardless of age or economic status, a close-up and powerful experience with fabulous music. That's we're trying to use music for the good of Utah communities.
Okay, so go ahead, Andrew.
Yep, and so on October 5th, which is Friday, we're having David Park and his trio. David Park sometimes wields a beautiful Stradivarius, but most of the time comes in and just will give an outstanding classical performance on violin and piano. And he, quite honestly, it's one of the best classical performances because he'll bring in a jazz element to it, and he gets so creative, and he really yields that violin. And so that's happening then. And then on November 29th, we have the Crescent
Super band.
Super big band. And that's 20 horns and instruments of really kids under 21 years of age that are world renowned. They play all over the world, and it is a fantastic, again, a great family show. Lots going on. And then on December
23,
who do we have there, Jeff?
It's my own group, Lark and Spur, with a Christmas concert, traditional and modern carols. And this is the group that God Excellence started with a concert at Westminster College in 2005. But ask more questions.
And it's all free, okay. Roger.
And I want to bring you back to just to point out to our audience that November 29th, that's Black Friday. Isn't that the day after Thanksgiving?
I think it is,
okay,
yeah.
So if you have family in town, that would be something that you could sign up to do.
All by design. And we actually have a sponsor. Leadership Park City Alumni is sponsoring and doing one of their events there. So we're making it a really family-friendly atmosphere.
And that's a holiday program the day after Thanksgiving, and the Crescent Super Band has performed at the Apollo Theater, Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, and around the world. It's one of Utah's great art stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other concerts in the greater area that you're looking forward to this season, Andrew?
So the live views that you were doing is actually at the Gallivan. We do weekly shows at the Gallivan, a big band where we do swing lessons, and then bring in a big band, and you get to practice, and that's kind of fun. And then we do an excellent series down there, too, which we bring different genres of different bands. Go ahead, sir.
Just to be specific, at the Gallivan Center next Tuesday is Tad Calcara and New Deal Swing with dance lesson at 7. And on Friday, in fact, tomorrow, Saturday, it's our collaboration with the Mexican Consulate to celebrate the big Mexican Heritage Day. And that's, again, at the Gallivan Center. It's a huge event, and we've been working with them for many years. But that illustrates everything we do is a community partnership.
Andrew, we don't have a lot of time left, but obviously, as we're talking, it sounds like you got these remarkable set of programs that cost money.
Mm-hmm.
Where's it come from, Andrew?
That's a really good question. So one of the things is for Park City, we got three grants, including the Sunrise Rotary, including the Summit Cultural Wrap Tax, and the Summit Restaurant Tax. And, of course, to continue these programs, we need private dollars, too. So we are looking for sponsors. And we have a membership organization called Joy Nation. And what we do is, with those dollars, we restrict it to the communities that they design it. So, for example, all those dollars are restricted to doing Summit County events. And we're not just going to do it at the Eccles. We're going to go up to the Ledges up in North Summit and go to the schools and doing private concerts and educational opportunities there. That's where all those dollars are coming from. We also got a big grant from the state of Utah Arts and Divisions, where we're doing all these rural concerts. It's why we're going all to these rural underserved communities and really driving arts appreciation and events, including Paiute, Delta, I mean, really all Daggett County, all over the state. I'm getting very familiar with the state of Utah, Roger. I live in this bubble in Park City, and then you go beyond, it's like, oh, there's a bigger state here.
Okay, before we go, website, how can people learn more about Excellence, see the schedule of shows?
ExcellenceConcerts.org. ExcellenceConcerts.org.
Any last words before we go? I can tell Jeff you got one more thing to say. 15 seconds.
You should see what happens when we bring a concert to a rural community and a rural school. It chokes you up to watch those kids respond when they very rarely get something like that.
Okay.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, John. Appreciate
it. Thanks for joining
you.
Us. We've been talking to Executive Director Jeff Whitley and Andrew Cat Cohen of the Excellence in the Community series.